Guten Abend, as they say in Deutschland. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show. Thursday, live from Salford City. It is exactly 4 o'clock, so it is, here in the UK. I've got a really interesting guest lined up for you today. And as usual, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on everything being discussed today. The Richie Allen Show begins now.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Climate the Movie, you can watch it everywhere today, BitChute, Rumble, YouTube even. It's a brilliant film about the climate debate. It's about far more than that. It's a wonderful film. Tom Nelson produced it, and he will join the programme a little bit later on to discuss it, why the film is so important, why everybody needs to see it, and they need to see it today. So Climate the Movie, I can't recommend it more than I have just recommended it. We'll talk to Tom Nelson a little bit later on in the programme about that. Before that, you and I will take a meander through the big news stories of the day here in the UK. Reach out to me via the website or download the app for the programme and send an instant message to me here at the studio, the app, the Richie Allen Show app, Google Play or the App Store then. Yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up with Tom Nelson a bit later on. Yeah, you well today, you are. How are you doing? How are you feeling? Are you in good form? Are you in fine fettle? You are. Thank you, as usual, for joining me live at 4 o'clock, the last live Richie Allen Show of this week. So let's make it a decent one. I'm going to kick off with something reported by GB News, which might be positive news. It might be positive. I think it is positive, in fact. The headline on the GB News website, a rising number of UK parents are worried about vaccines, and this is unlikely to change anytime soon. So this is good news and bad news. I'll explain why in a moment. Good news because parents are becoming a bit more discerning about what they put into their children's arms. But also, there might be something else going on here. Let's have a chat about it for a minute in any case. So GB News reporting, a growing number of parents are concerned about childhood vaccination, according to a new national survey. It's the survey. That is interesting. So the uptick is caused by information disseminated online, predominantly through social media. And that's where there might be some negative. It comes as the vaccine-preventable measles makes a UK comeback with cases rising across England. Now, health chiefs are urging people with concerns to speak to their GPs, their health visitors or midwives to ensure they have the correct information about jabs and the diseases they protect against. Do not listen to anybody not approved by us. Don't go looking online for information about vaccines. Speak to your doctor, your health visitor or your midwife. They'll tell you the truth. Now, this poll is conducted every year by the dystopian UK Health Security Agency. And the poll included about 1,000 people with babies aged between 2 months and 3 years, 4 months. Yeah, aged between 2 months and 3 years, 4 months. They've written this very badly. Aged between 2 months, yes, and 3.5 years, basically. Okay. And 1,000 people with children aged between 3 and 5, okay? Now, the majority of those who responded back in 2023, last year, agreed that vaccines work, 89%, 84% agreed they are safe, and 82% agreed they are trusted. But there has been a surge in people saying they had come across information that included something which made them concerned, with the primary sources being the internet and social media. So there was an increase in people expressing concern about vaccines from the year 2022 into the year 2023. I'm guessing, as you would probably guess yourself, that the COVID jab debacle might have something to do with this. How could you trust your GP after the COVID jab debacle? I mean, they let their patients down, didn't they? Not every doctor, of course. We have interviewed on this programme some wonderful doctors who refused from the very, very outset to administer COVID shots to their patients because they couldn't achieve informed consent from the patient because not enough was known about the jabs at the time. Interesting that a rise in scepticism around vaccination. That is interesting as they're launching programmes, not just here in the UK, but in Ireland as well, to catch up people. They're even asking people in their 20s to check if you received the measles jab when you were younger, and if you didn't, come forward and have it now. No thanks. So that's happening. BBC News reporting, number of news organisations reporting this afternoon that another Conservative Party person has defected to Reform UK, the Richard Tice-led party. Don't get too excited. It isn't an MP. This time it's a Conservative candidate for the Mayor of Greater Manchester race. He's defected to Reform UK. He's accused the Tories of giving up on the North of England. They've given up on the North of England, he said. So I've joined Reform. The guy's name is Dan Barker. He had been selected by the Tories to challenge the current Mayor, Andy Burnham of Labour. He, Barker, follows Lee Anderson, the former Tory party deputy chair. He defected to Reform a couple of weeks ago. Barker said the Tories had abandoned northern areas to focus on other seats which are under threat from the Lib Dems. They've now got 2 weeks to select a new candidate for mayor of Greater Manchester. They mightn't bother, actually, because Burnham is a shoo-in, isn't he, to retain or to hold on to the mayor gig. So they mightn't even put a candidate forward. I mean, they probably will, but they might not. In any case, that might be interesting because some newspapers are running polls today suggesting that the Conservative Party is now only 4 points ahead of Reform in the polls. But as I said on this show and on the newspaper show, the papers show, that's happened in the past, but it often, quite often or more often than not, hasn't resulted in seats being won by parties like Reform. We've seen this with UKIP and the Brexit Party in the past. The polls showed they were pretty close to the Tories or to Labour, but in reality, when the election happened, they never won a seat at all. So another defector to Reform from the Conservative Party. 7.5 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. And this in the BBC, this is tragic, it's depressing, but it's important. Absolute poverty. The UK has seen the biggest rise in absolute poverty for 30 years. They're laying the blame for this at the door of the energy price crisis. They're saying when all is factored in, the energy price crisis has caused the sharpest increase in UK absolute poverty in 30 years. Steep price rises following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia meant that hundreds of thousands of people fell into absolute poverty. The figure jumped to 12 million last year, a rise of 600,000 people, or 0.78 percentage points. Now, absolute poverty is the measure used by the Prime Minister when describing the government's record. Even more families would have fallen into absolute poverty if it hadn't been, according to the BBC, for government support like the cost of living payments. So poverty is everywhere. Food bank usage continues to rise everywhere. Harried and beleaguered people are to be seen everywhere. It's pretty awful. An old friend of mine once dubbed this many years ago the Hunger Games Society. And he's right. It's beginning to look a lot like that now. 9 minutes past the hour. Now, this is really interesting. We've talked a bit about this. We've talked about this quite a bit with people like Stuart Waiton from the Scottish Union for Education. So Scotland is going to launch its new hate speech law on the 1st of April. I wonder if there's something going on there, April Fool's Day. You know, maybe saying the people are fools. This is why we're launching it on April 1st, because the people are idiots. And it could see people falling foul of the new hate speech law, going to jail for 7 years in extreme cases, okay? So this is the new Hate Crime and Public Order Act in Scotland, activated April Fool's Day, this April Fool's Day coming, and people ranging from Catholic clergy, people like J.K. Rowling, the author, they've condemned it for restricting basic freedoms. The text of the bill is pretty horrific, really. And it's been around a few years. It's not brand new, this. It's been around a few years. It warns against acts that stir up hatred against a group of persons of certain protected characteristics, including age, disability, religion, or in the case of a social or cultural group, perceived religious affiliation, sexual orientation, transgender identity, and variations in sex characteristics. So any act that is believed to be stirring up hatred or inciting hatred against all of those groups of people based on age, protected characteristics, age, disability, religion, blah, 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 sexual orientation, trans identity, could see in serious trouble. And when you look at the Scottish Government's explanatory notes, right, the notes warn that a person can be prosecuted for, quote, stirring up hatred, wait for it, by voicing or sharing offensive rhetoric across a variety of media, including displaying, publishing or distributing the material, for example, on a sign, on the internet, through a website, a blog, a podcast, social media, etc., either directly or by forwarding or repeating material that originates from a third party through printed media like magazines or leaflets, etc. Giving, sending, showing or playing the material to another person, for example, through online streaming, by email, playing a video, through public performance of a play, etc. Holy fucking shit. Did you hear that? You did, didn't you? You heard it. Okay? Displaying through a website, displaying material by a third party, a blog, a podcast, a social media post, etc. Forwarding something that somebody else said that you found interesting. But you won't be able to do that if it has been deemed hateful. You'll be wrapped up in it, in the sting by the Scottish police. Well, I didn't say it, yes, but you forwarded it. But how do you know why I forwarded it? I might have been forwarding it to say it to somebody, look at this idiot here. Look at what this person said. This is mad stuff. Those convicted of stirring up hatred could be fined. There is a prison sentence also. Maximum term 7 years. Mad. It's just hilariously mad, isn't it? Let's listen to Newsnight from last night, presented by Victoria Derbyshire. The Scottish National Party, MSP, member of the Scottish National Parliament, a guy called Fulton McGregor, was on Newsnight. Now, before we hear the Scottish National Party guy who's all in favour of these completely Orwellian laws, let's hear Lucy Hunter-Blackburn. She has a PhD in student funding, in educational research, and a master's in political theory of toleration. What is she worried about? She's not happy with Scotland's new hate speech laws. Why is she worried? Here she is, Lucy Hunter-Blackburn.
Well, the fear is that a wide range of things are simply unclear after the legislation. The attempt to try and get clearer protections of freedom of speech around sex and gender identity were totally rebutted by the government, and we're left uncertain.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could I ask you for some examples?
Well, the sort of things that women are worried about are talking about, can lesbians only be women? So lesbians can't have a penis was a sort of phrase. Can I stand with a placard and say that? What happens if someone says that a trans woman are men, that they can't change sex, people can't change sex, and things like that. It's really fundamental points are based on the belief that people cannot change sex.
And she's actually right. You could be arrested after April 1st if you were to stand outside, I don't know, a health club, and you knew that men dressed as women were using the female changing rooms in the health club, and you as a woman are concerned about using the health club yourself because you don't want to be confronted by a man's drooping bollocks and dangly bits when you're coming out of the showers, right? So you decide to get a placard and say, men can never be women, there's no such thing as a trans woman or something like that. You could be arrested.
And although the First Minister, as he now is, said in Parliament that it's all safe, that's not what the law says.
Exactly.
And when we tried to get things like protection for those kind of statements written into the law, we were repeatedly rebutted in Parliament.
Repeatedly rebutted. So what about the Scottish National Party then? The ruling party in Scotland's devolved government. What about them? Well, this guy Fulton McGregor was on the same programme. In fact, shortly after Lucy Hunter Blackburn, and he was asked, why is it necessary? Why is this law necessary at all? Here he is.
Well, hate crime is a major problem across Scotland and across the country. And
hate crime now is a major problem across Scotland and across the country. Of course, she didn't ask him to elaborate. What do you mean? What sort of hate crime?
It wreaks havoc on individuals.
It wreaks havoc on individuals now. Wreaks havoc on individuals, he said. Hate crime. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, listen.
It's the country and it wreaks havoc on individuals, on communities and on families. So, in essence, this bill is part of a range of measures to tackle that.
And so if Lucy Hunter-Blackburn held up a placard saying lesbians don't have a penis, or if J.K. Rowling tweeted trans women are men, could they be reported to police under this new hate crime legislation?
My understanding of that is that whether they're reported to the police or not is up to individuals. But my understanding
so the answer is yes.
My understanding is though, that they wouldn't be taken any further. I was a member
of
the Scottish Parliament committee that took forward this legislation, and there are robust safeguards in place to protect freedom of speech.
There are not.
Freedom of speech is extremely important to the Scottish Parliament.
No, it isn't. It's obviously not important to you. I mean, do I have to go back and read that nonsense document again about people sharing things and spreading things around and discussing them and how they could fall foul of your hate speech law? So freedom of speech is obviously not of fundamental importance to the Scottish National Party. As for the cops, Victoria Derbyshire takes them up on that.
I've got no idea whether they take it further or not. The police, in fact, Police Scotland have said they're going to investigate every hate crime.
So what I'm saying is the law doesn't come in place until the 1st of April. And people could report these offences or these incidents just now. What I'm saying is the law that we passed, these are issues, these are statements or whatever example you want to use.
What a bullshitter. Are you listening to this guy?
It shouldn't be taken forward and shouldn't be prosecuted. It's not the point of the law. The point of the law is not to curb freedom of speech.
But it is.
Not in any way.
No, I know
that
it's not.
Has perhaps been the narrative, but that is not the point of the law.
I could have choked Derbyshire there for saying, no, I know it's not, when he said the point of the law is not to impinge upon freedom of speech. Well, it is. I don't know why she's agreeing with him, but anyway.
But let me quote Tony Lenehan. He's 1KC. He says, the problem with this legislation is the offence is in the eye of the beholder. So, for example, Mr. McGregor, if you said to me, after April the 1st, we're in Scotland, Victoria, you're too old to be on TV. If I felt you were stirring up hatred on the grounds of age, I could report you to the police. Correct?
Yep. Well, we've already established that you could report that to the police anyway. But what I'm saying is that isn't the point of the law.
It's not the point of the law, he says, deliberately missing the point of her question. It doesn't matter if it is the point of the law or not, if it is open to interpretation in that way. It's not the point of the law, yes, but it can be interpreted like that. And the police can be, phoned or visited by somebody who says, that guy hates me because of my age or because of my gender or because of my sexual orientation. So it doesn't matter what you mean by the law opens the door for this sort of madness.
To capture these sort of instances.
No, I know.
And you know...
Again, that clown Derbyshire says, I know, when he says it's not our intention. I don't understand that.
I'm confident that the law will be implemented properly by the justice agencies across Scotland.
Yeah, but nobody else shares his confidence. That was Fulton McGregor, member of the Scottish Parliament for the SNP, Scotland's new hate speech law, which comes in on April Fool's Day. And, of course, we see the same thing happening in Ireland. We see it happening in Canada. We see it happening in other European countries. Isn't it amazing how these things happen in lockstep? It's almost as if... Oh, sure, that can't be the case. It's almost as if... Ah, you're a conspiracy theorist. It's almost as if all of these governments, supposedly sovereign governments, are taking their orders from the same people. I wonder who those people are. Yeah, thoughts on the Scottish government's hate speech law to richieallen.co.uk, or do send me a message via the app for the programme. The app can be downloaded Google or Apple. Indeed. Okay. Good evening to Neil. Neil, thank you for your link. I'll get on it a bit later on. Hello to Roger. Roger, hi. He says, regarding your mention of Finland in yesterday's show, he says, your O'Brien bit was very funny, but I was a bit disappointed with your journalism skills, he says. As a Finnish dual citizen, I know that Alex Stubb was elected president. Good for you. But you failed to mention that the former PM, Sanna Marin, has been captured by Tony Blair's Institute after leaving Finnish politics. So you're disappointed with my journalism skills, because in a skit about James O'Brien, I neglected to mention that Sanna Marin is now working for Tony Blair. And that demonstrated a lack of journalism skill on my part, Roger. Really? Roger, grow up. But thank you for your email. This one from Ashka. My baby girl is almost 8 months old. I didn't vaccinate her. The health visitor sent the nurse over to quell any concerns I may have. I told them I do not trust the companies that make the jabs, and I've looked into the ingredients of the jabs, and the list didn't fill me with confidence. On the last visit, I was told there was a case of measles in my area, perhaps to scare me into jabbing the baby, says Ashka. Now, take any advice from me with a big pinch of salt. What I mean by that is, don't take what I say as gospel. Always look into it for yourself and speak to other parents, because I'm not a parent. I've been told on good authority many times over the years, never, ever, ever consent to a health visitor coming round to your property to check in on your children. Never consent to it. The child is fine, thank you. Everybody is fine, thank you. Please don't call again. If we need you, we will be in touch. We know where the GP surgery is. I've been given that advice even though I'm not a parent. So I would take that very seriously, particularly for parents who might have a newborn baby. You might remember Rob coming on the programme late last week. Very good. Or was it this week? Weeks bleed one into the other. Jesus. Rob was great. Came on to talk about having a letter sent when they decided not to have any more jabs. His youngster, his lad, had one. And they weren't happy. They looked up the schedule. They didn't like it. And they thought, well, maybe he doesn't need all of these jabs. And his local doctor or the surgery threatened to raise a safeguarding issue. And he didn't take it lying down. He got back in touch and he gave them who began it. It's a great Irish saying. I gave them who began it. He got stuck into them. Did Rob, okay? I would advise not doing business with these people at all. Health visitor, we'd like to come around. For what? To check on the welfare of the baby. The baby's fine and it's none of your business. Go away. You might be a bit more diplomatic than me. I might advise being a bit more diplomatic than me. I don't suffer fools gladly. I'm nearly 50 now. My fool tolerance wore out about 7 or 8 years ago. I don't suffer people now. I generally don't. Anybody who knows me will tell you. No patience. I have no tolerance for idiots. Anymore. Kevin is in Wimbledon. Hello, Kevin. Nice part of the world. Regarding Kate Middleton and conspiracies about her public absence, I think a Christmas COVID booster followed by a dose of Bell's palsy is worth a punt, says Kevin. Do you think so, Kevin? You think she had a COVID jab? Listen, you might be right. You know more than I do. 24 minutes past the hour. We're going to go another way in a moment. Don't forget a bit later on, Tom Nelson will be on the programme to talk about his brand new film. Well, the film he produced. It is a film called, You know what it's called, don't you? It's a film called Climate the Movie. It had a premiere in London 2 weeks ago. It is now, from today, available on pretty much every video sharing platform to watch for free. Watch it, share it, give it to others to watch, debate it, chat about it. It's very, very, very important. Music from Chris Rea then. Come on, Chris. On Thursday's Richie Allen Show, this 21st of March 2024. Lots to come on the programme. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining in. You're very good, you know. Message the bejesus out of me, please. In fact, I would say message the living bejesus out of the programme. Go right ahead then. Chris Rea, Let's Dance on the Richie Allen Show, 27 and a half minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. Ian says that blaming poverty in the UK on Russia's operation in Ukraine, even partly, is horse manure. Theresa May sold off her gas reserves for one thing, plus the Ponzi scheme, that is the energy sector anyway. Horse manure, says Ian. You won't get an argument there for me, Ian. Ardell says, this means the Lighthouse paper is fecked in Scotland then. I think he's referring obviously to the hate speech laws. Mike says, in other words, we are not allowed an opinion that doesn't follow the script. Free speech now has a script then, he says. He asks, yes. Grace Ann says, hate crime in Scotland, really? Aren't we known for being one of the most friendliest countries in the world? Is the only hate is the hate the politicians are inflicting on society. Andy says, is this trying to merge criticism into hate? Yes, it is. That's exactly what it is doing. Of course it is. You will not be allowed to critique, or you shouldn't expect to be allowed to critique a group or an individual based on protected characteristics. That's ultimately what it is. You might take a pretty dim view of somebody's, a particular way that somebody chooses to express himself or herself. You might proffer an opinion on it. Now, fair enough, your opinion might not have been sought out or canvassed, but you're a human being, right? You're entitled to say, doesn't that fella look like a bit of a feckin' agent altogether, like? But no, not in the future. No, no. That's hateful. Or it will be deemed hateful. And all eyes will turn to the alleged victim of the hate, because it's all about perception. And if the victim, if the complainant says, this person spoke about me because he or she manifestly hates me, well, then you might be in trouble. And I'm not exaggerating. Roger came back. Good on you, Roger. He says, Richie, thanks for the mention. I meant it in jest. I know you meant it in jest. He said, my point was, you conflated PM and president. Sana was prime minister. Alex is president. I always do that, though, Roger. I mean, they're all the bloody same to me. Yeah, I mean, it's a common enough mistake, isn't it? But you're right, Sana Marin was prime minister and Alex is the president today. You're quite right to make that distinction. I suppose you're right. Journalists should be accurate. But remember where I did it. It was in the midst of a skit about James O'Brien. So give us a break, Roger. But thanks for coming back to me in any case, pal. David says, but Sana Marin is fit. That was the point, wasn't it? Yes, that was the point. Sana Marin is fit. But he makes a good point, Roger. I mean, it's a programme for another day, in fact. How so many of these young leaders that cropped up around Europe in the last 5 to 10 years, how so many of them went through the World Economic Forum's youth programmes, and how so many of them are now involved either with people like Tony Blair and his foundation, or they're working for, say it for me, they're working for the Bill Gates Foundation in some capacity. Maybe not directly. You won't find them sitting on the board of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but they might have a role at one of its subsidiaries. You get what I'm saying? So Gates and Schwab and the World Economic Forum, these are really big players, really, in terms of managing the foot soldiers. Because I think we'd all agree, and it's not a good thing if we all agree, I like a good argument, but I think we would all agree that even the likes of Tony Blair, even with his foundation, no, Blair might be a capo regime, maybe, I'm not sure. I don't think very, very high up the trough. But, so the likes of these Sana Marin characters and Leo Varadkar and these people, and Vaughan Gething and in Wales now, and Sunak, you know, the Goldman Sachs banker. These are foot soldiers. It's how I see them in any case. And they are managed through civil servants, through think tanks. And those civil servants and think tanks are managed by the organisations we mentioned. You know, the big NGOs. So you're looking at Soros's Open Society Foundations. You're looking at Gates. You're looking at Tony Blair Foundations. It's pretty simple when you look at it. You know, and feel free to shoot me down and say nothing is ever that simple. But when you look at the power structure, it is. What we don't know, and we really do not know, is what's at the top of that pyramid. Who or what? We don't know. Some independent content creators, and I'm not going to criticise them, because people should believe whatever they want to believe, they're forever blaming the Jews for it. It's always the Jews. For some people, it's always the Jews. It's not the Jews. It's got nothing to do with Jewish people at all. I must be a shill for saying that. It isn't. I don't know what's up there, what's really running things. But maybe we'll find out one day. Hi to Nelly. Hello, Nelly. Nelly says, it'll be interesting to see if women around my age will actually receive compensation for the raising by 6 years of the state pension. Or, as I read, an apology. No thanks to the latter, says Nelly. Nelly, I haven't been following this story today, funnily enough, but everybody else is, well, when I say everybody else, the national and commercial media are completely all over it. And this is about the WASP bees, right? The generation of people who were born in, was it 1960 or 1950? 1960, was it? 1950. 60, it has to be 60. What's wrong with me? And when the UK government raised the state pension age, the age where you begin to receive your pension, they moved it from 63, for men, from 63 to 65 and then to 66, didn't they? And then they brought women up at the speed of light. They brought women up to aged 66 as well. And that screwed, obviously, with the finances of many, many, many women. And that is what Nelly is referring to. The mainstream media is covering it. The women are known as WASPies. That is right. Hi to Bike Hub. Thank you. He's compared me to Chris Rea. No, I'd love to be able to sing like Chris Rea. Give over. Fantastic. David says, you've put a smile on my face, BBG. I've been down all day. The wish you were dead type of down, he says. Nice one for the reset. You're welcome, pal. You're very welcome indeed. No doubt about it. Okay, Paul in Liverpool. My brother's kid has no vaccinations. Told the home visitors to feck off. Is also homeschooled. He never registered the birth, so he has no birth cert. My brother managed to get him a passport and bank account without the birth certificate, says Paul in Liverpool. Now, that is fascinating. Thank you, Paul. Let's talk momentarily about the would-be leader of the UK, the would-be Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer, the heir to David Cameron, the heir to Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer, the heir to Margaret Thatcher. Isn't it amazing how they're rubbing their own supporters' faces in it all the time? You and I have known for many, many years now, I've known for two decades, that politics is an illusion. It is a fantasy. It is a trap. And billions of people are caught up in the trap, the idea that they really do work for you. And all you've got to do is give them the boot next time there's an election and you can change the course of your lives. It is horse shit. They're all working for the same agenda. We know this, right? Starmer. And because it's so open knowledge now, particularly after the COVID bullshit, when every single party, oh yeah, lockdown, 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 yeah, 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 yeah. Yes, yes, silence the dissenters. Yes, 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 yes. Like Don now, Don from Sexy Beast. Yes, yes, yes. Silence them all. Shut them down. Ban them. Censor them. Do not let scientists on the radio from Cambridge or Oxford who say lockdowns are dangerous. So all the parties behave like this, every one of them. When the jabs came out, yes, have your jab, get the bloody jab, get the bloody jab. You shouldn't have a job if you don't take the jab. They all said this. So last 3-4 years, more people know now it is a charade. And because of this, the Labour Party can laugh in the faces of their trade union bases, laughing at them. You have Rachel Reeve, the Shadow Chancellor. You have Starmer himself. You have Darren Jones, another dickhead who works in the shadow finance department for the Labour Party, openly dropping the name of Margaret Thatcher, one of the greatest bastards in the history of bastards. They can do this now, Labour politicians, laughing at people. It's another way of telling their own base, you don't really think we're working for you, do you really? When we can laud, when we can talk about not the benefits, but we can extol the virtues of Maggie Thatcher, the Labour Party. There must be miners, obviously not mining now, and their sons and daughters, they must want to fucking strangle Labour politicians. Bastards. So, Keir Starmer went on Jeremy Vine's Channel 5 television programme today. Why? Why did he do that? To take questions from the listeners, or the viewers in this case. He was not so much confronted, but Neil wanted to know about the water. And this really crystallises where we are in 2024.
Hello there. Good morning to both
of
you.
Hi, Neil.
What's your question?
Do you hear that ignorant bastard, Jeremy Vine? Do you hear that there? There's Neil, comes on, he's lovely. Ah, how you, Jeremy, how you care? What's your question? You might say hello to the guy, like, he's phoning in your programme, you know, anyway.
Good morning to both of you.
Hi, Neil.
What's your question?
Prick.
Right, my question is to do with cost of living, but I'm getting increasingly concerned now. You know, as an ordinary person, an ordinary voter, we can vote for politicians of local council and in government, but we can't vote for whoever runs the water industry. I've just opened my bill for next year, next month, and it's gone up 18.18%.
18% increase in his water bill, imagine it.
No explanation, 18% rise in 1 year. This is becoming now taxation without any representation. I can do nothing about that bill.
Good man, nothing.
All right.
If it goes to 18...
Look at Vine interrupting him then. What a prick Jeremy Vine is. I loathe him.
...percent each year. I'm going to be actually...
Well, and we could throw in the...
The guy said, if it continues like this, I'm going to be broke. Before he could finish that, Vine interrupted him. He's a beauty, Vine, isn't he?
The sewage in the rivers and the sea is a disgrace. That's a massive job of work for you to sort that out.
It's a massive job of work for you to sort out the sewage, says Jeremy Vine, trying to skate over Neil, saying, the bastards put my bill up by 18%. Can you believe that? What does Keir Starmer say?
It is a massive job of work, Neil, and you know, it's the extra money on the bills, but it is also the terrible pollution in our rivers and our seas. I went with my kids.
Starmer just, you know, barely mentions the 18% hike on the bill and goes straight to the pollution, and then tells an anecdote about where he went with his kids. What a bloke he is!
In our rivers and our seas, I went with my kids to Bournemouth last summer, and we couldn't go in the water because it was too filthy because of the sewage that was in there.
I hope wherever you went in Bournemouth, they pissed on your candy floss, you bastard. The guys just said to you, I'm absolutely fucked here. It's gone up 18%. If they do that again next year, I'll be in arrears. I can't pay my water. And you're talking about Bournemouth and poo in the water in Bournemouth. Your poor children couldn't go in the water.
I think that revolts all of us. And Neil, what we've got to do, I think, is we've got to have much tighter regulation of the water sector.
He didn't ask about the fucking pollution in the water. He said about the bills.
Tighter regulation that we've got. The other thing I'd like to see, Neil, is accountability all the way to the top. So the person at the top is personally liable, particularly in relation to the pollution, because at the moment that isn't happening.
You'd kill for a decent host, wouldn't you, to be sitting alongside Starmer. Keir, he asked you about the outrageous fucking profiteering by the private companies that Maggie sold the water to. And that your pal Tony Blair continued to do when he came into office. Profiteering on people. Ripping them off. What are you going to do about it?
There's got to be that sense of personal responsibility.
But they priced in the fines. And you can give them personal responsibility. You can throw some in jail. But Neil's bill will still go up 18%.
Yeah, but that personal responsibility makes a real difference. If the person at the top knows...
Even when Vine mentions the 18%, Starmer ignores it.
it's my job that's on the line, or I'm on the line.
Will we actually see water companies in jail if Labour take power?
Well, I'd like to see the pollution go is my better alternative rather than putting people in jail. But we need the threat of that. We need the accountability to the top. I've run a big organisation. I ran the Crown Prosecution Service with 7,000 staff.
Oh, good God. Keir Starmer. They want you to believe that they are in opposition to what you've already got. Imagine it. Imagine if socialism was real. Imagine if you'd ever met a socialist politician. You haven't. You think you have. You've never met one. You've met social democrats. You've never met a socialist. You've never met somebody like Hugo Chavez. You know what he should have said there when, in reality, if politics was not an illusion, if these guys were free to do and say whatever they wanted to do and say, his answer to Neil would have been, Neil, I'm sorry about that 18%. Listen, lad, don't worry about it, because if the Labour Party wins the election in May or in the autumn, I'm taking the whole lot back, Neil, every fucking last bit of it. I'm taking it all back. I'm taking the water. I'm taking utilities. I'm taking the forests. I'm taking the beaches. I'm taking the national parks. I'm taking all the things that were sold off by all of these bastards going back 35, 40 years. I'm taking back the council houses. All of it, man. Public transport, every bit of it. Do you want a job, Neil? Go and get your HGV licence or learn how to drive a bus, because there'll be plenty of fucking jobs if we win the election, Neil. Is what he should have said. We're taking it all back from these gangsters. The gangsters that came before us selling all this shit off. It ends today, is what he should have said. But he didn't. 13 minutes to the top of the hour. And I'm going to make... Water is going to be brought back under public control. And Fergal Sharkey's going to run it for us. Fergal Sharkey's going to do it. Because he's got a good heart, that guy. So he has. This is the Richie Allen Show. Coming up shortly, climate change. You don't want to miss it. Brand new film. Music from Wet Leg, that's Shays Long on the Richie Allen Show. 13 and a half minutes it is to the top of the hour. Hi to Kaz, who says Blair is on the take from some very influential people, according to Kaz. Thank you, Kaz. David says, Richie, shouldn't there be a petition, David Bramble, shouldn't there be a petition to urge Starmer to change his historically resonant Christian name to Adolf or Benito now? So that nobody can be in any doubt as to where his real political allegiance lies. That's David. Thank you, David. Hi to Kay, who says, well done for being awake to the nonsense for 20 years, says Kay. I'm new to it all. Learning fast. What do you think? Is it best not to vote, to spoil the ballot paper, or doesn't it make any difference? Kay, I'd never give anybody any advice there. The last general election I voted in was in 2002. In Ireland, the general election of 2002. I've never voted in a national nor local election since. I did, for the crack, vote in the Brexit referendum in 2016. Obviously, I voted Leave. And that was when we were living in Fallow Field, and the polling centre, the primary school, was pretty much about 250 metres away from my front door. So didn't have any excuse, really. So it's up to you, Kay. She asks, with regards to water bills, mine has also gone up. Northumbrian Water, discharging sewage, not building reservoirs, and paying millions to their shareholders. Yes, Kay. Millions and millions and millions that could be going to the Exchequer, that could be used to repair the roads, to build houses for people, houses that are affordable for people on lower incomes. That's right. And this, you're only talking about the water. I'm not going to do my privatisation rant. I did rant about it a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, I was able to tot up. I did a bit of research before I ranted about how much money they have cost the Exchequer through their privatisation agenda in the last 40 years. It would be worth hundreds of billions of pounds a year to the Exchequer. They would never need to tax anybody again if they'd never privatised all they privatised. It is horrendous. It's hard not to lose your temper when thinking about it, let alone speaking about it. You know? Bryno, hello Bryno. Loves the Wet Leg tune, he says. Good man, Bryno. Nothing wrong with it. Nelly came back to me to say, born in the 50s. Thank you for the correction, Nelly. You're right. I've I shouldn't have made that mistake. I've been reading the blooming thing every time I opened up the Telegraph or the Times today. Thanks for the clarification. Coming up for 10 minutes to the top of the hour. And I have loads to go between now and four or five, even five. So I'm chopping, cutting and pasting as I go along. What will I do? What will I not do? I was going to do something about mental health, but I won't. You know, Mel Stride, the Work and Pension Secretary, has written in the Telegraph today. He says Britain's approach to mental health is in danger of having gone too far and that the normal anxieties of life are being labelled as an illness. He wants to get 150,000 people currently signed off work with mild conditions. He wants to get them off their backsides looking for a job. That's what he says, not what I say. Don't throw anything at me. He says if they go to the doctor and they say, I'm feeling down and bluesy, the doctor will give them on average 7 minutes, and then 94% of the time, the doctor will sign the person off as not fit to carry out any work whatsoever. He says, this has become a no-go area. We need to talk about it and have a grown-up debate. He talked about how a culture has emerged in recent years with celebrities, with news presenters, sportsmen and women, whining, he doesn't say this, I'm saying this, whining on and on and on about their mental health. Right? I've talked about it on this radio show many times in recent years. And this is encouraging this behaviour, he reckons. Pharmaceutical companies are all too willing to prescribe, basically, life feelings, ordinary feelings, brought on by the everyday travails, you know, the everyday struggles of life, basically. So he makes an interesting point. I was going to get into that, but I won't. There's some interesting audio. So what we will do is we'll talk about Britain's diversity drive backfiring. Now, this is interesting. I got into it on the papers this morning. It's very interesting. Kemi Badenoch, Biscuit Bar, I don't know how you pronounce it. She's black and she's the business secretary. She commissioned an independent inclusion at work panel last year with a lot of different people on the panel. Not conservatives, not just liberals, lots of people. And she said, tell me, are these programs that companies are being, you know, basically forced into to train their employees and to inform their hiring practices? Are these equality, diversity and inclusion courses doing any good at all? Are they informing people on hiring policies, making better decisions, and are they making life better for everybody in work? It came back a resounding no. It's a load of old tosh. It doesn't do anything. Seriously, this panel came back after a year and said that some companies are making fortunes by selling these bullshit training courses to companies, right? And that's really what's going on here. But they said in terms of, you know, inclusivity and equality, it's making little or no difference. And I reckon the reason is because there was no problem to fix in the first place. You know, the workplaces I've visited over the years are not full of, you know, white people, balding, grey, white men, with white men attitudes. They're not. Anywhere I go, I see a pretty varied workforce, depending on whether I'm in a supermarket or a restaurant or a pub or if I'm in a certain shop, you know. Anyway, it's crazy, this stuff, you know. So they're basically saying that companies should not be compelled anymore to be doing these stupid feckin' courses, you know. So it's an interesting one. On this, GB News had an interesting debate. Pearl Davis is a social media influencer, whatever that means. But she's interesting. She's from America. And Benjamin Butterworth is a gay lad, I believe. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. He's famous for just being gay and appearing as a talking head on lots of news channels. That's basically his act. What's your act? Well, I'm gay. And I go on programs talking about LGBTQ stuff and the need for equality. So they have a debate, Pearl Davis and Benjamin Butterworth, about these diversity courses in work, and it's kind of interesting.
I don't think we need these programs. We're not asking for this. You know, you can't eliminate prejudice. You can't put in a program and eliminate prejudice. I don't think we need it. I don't think we need special treatment and programs just because I am born a woman.
Okay, Benjamin, what do you think? Do you think it's done more to drive a wedge between us?
Well, look, I appreciate that at least Pearl has been honest, that she doesn't care about prejudice. She doesn't care.
She never said that.
Care if women are on the receiving end of discrimination. She says there's no...
Never said that either.
No point trying to overcome it because you can't. At least that's an honest answer to people exclusion and narrow-minded workplaces.
Like, what are you going to put in a program that's going to make someone prejudiced than not prejudice?
Well, of course, prejudice, by definition... Prejudice, by definition, is a learned behaviour. You know, none of us are born hating black people or women or gay people, but some people develop those hatreds. They develop them in subtle ways or acute ways, and that causes serious problems. And I think when you talk about workplaces, when you have those kind of attitudes that can be prevalent and that can be subtle, that means that people of those minority descriptions can't fulfil their potential.
Okay.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I just think if these programs were effective, they would be working. They're clearly not. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. And I don't need special treatment because I'm a woman. I think the best person for the job should get the job. There shouldn't be preferential hiring practices.
Yeah, I wonder how women manage to make their way into workforces around the world in the 1960s and 1970s. How did women manage that? There must have been diversity, equality and inclusivity courses back then. That's right, there weren't. Women found a way. Women who wanted to work in certain companies, in certain industries, decided if they bloody well wanted to, they would make it happen. They didn't need the state to interfere or employment laws to be drafted, compelling companies to participate in these ridiculous courses, unconscious bias training and all of that old bollocks. Hey, listen, before we introduce our guest on Thursday's programme, your man Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, he's been speaking to Times Radio about Kate Middleton, Kate Gate. Where is she? Is she around? Is she alive? Is she still working for the royal family? Has she left William? All of these questions. And he's not too happy about conspiracy theories. I think you may very well hear the presenter, Stig Abel, first.
Kate Middleton, the concerns around her, I'm not going to ask you about her personally because I know you won't answer that. I don't want to put you in that position. But I wonder if it points to a societal issue that we live in this world of frenzied conspiracy. I wonder if you're worried that compassion is being replaced by conspiracy. I wonder if the whole frenzy around Kate Middleton and her health and the validity of where she is and who she is and what she's doing, I wonder if that does point to a moral issue you might have a view on.
Thanks, Dick. Yes, it does. I think we are obsessed with conspiracy and we have little sense of the humanity of those who are caught in the glare of the news. It doesn't matter who it is, people should be allowed to be ill, have an operation, whatever it is, and to live their lives in peace without everyone demanding that they prove something every other day. It's the web that has made these conspiracy theories for all kinds of people run riot. And it's extremely unhealthy. It's just old-fashioned village gossip that can now go around the world in seconds. Yeah. We have to turn away from that. And it is...
Speak for yourself, Justin.
Gossiping in that way is wrong.
It's wrong. It's a sin. Did the baby Jesus tell him in a dream, it's a sin to be gossiping in that way about the royal family, says Justin Welby. Something else out of that interview with Times Radio that properly gave me belly laughs was we've just been speaking about diversity. What is it? Equality and inclusivity. Stig Abel asked him a question and it's kind of funny. Listen to this.
But is it true, in terms of accuracy, that the Church of England is hiring something called a deconstructing whiteness officer?
You heard the question, didn't you? Is the Church of England hiring a deconstructing whiteness officer?
Because
Church of England, no. Birmingham Diocese did put that in an advert.
Birmingham Diocese did put out an advert advertising for a deconstructing whiteness officer. Birmingham Diocese.
And When I saw it, I rang up the person in charge of that area and said, what on earth does this mean? And why on earth have you put it in?
And what did he say? What did he say?
He said, well, he accepted. I said, look, this sounds a bit like W1A. You know, can we please do these things in English? What the person's job is, across six parishes, not hired by the Church of England, it's hired by dioceses who are more independent charities. We have 15,000 of them in the Church of England. What this person does is to make sure that those from ethnic minority backgrounds...
Wait for it. Those from ethnic minority backgrounds...
...apply for jobs in the Church of England have a level playing field.
Wow. Why didn't they just advertise the job in those terms then? We're looking for a recruitment specialist to ensure that people from ethnic backgrounds, minority backgrounds, get a fair crack of the whip when it comes to applying for jobs within the Church of England or in the diocese. What's this deconstructing whiteness bollocks all about, really? I have no idea. You're listening to Thursday's Richie Allen radio show. My name is Richie Allen, you know that. I cannot wait for you to meet our guest today. He's produced a brilliant, and I do mean brilliant because I watched it yesterday, Climate the Movie, The Cold Truth, directed by Martin Durkin, but produced by Tom Nelson. And Tom is in New York City, and he's standing by. He'll be with me in a couple of minutes. But you know, we often take the mickey on this programme out of the advancements in science and technology. We take the mickey out of, I suppose, artificial intelligence and robotics and all sorts of things like that. And maybe, say it for me, maybe we need a bit of balance from time to time, don't we? So there was a brilliant story in the Mail today. I'm just bringing it up here. Again, you know, some of the men and women who work in medicine, some of them are absolute geniuses. There was a boy born back in October of last year in Staines. Where's Staines? Is it the Midlands or is it further south? And the kid was born without any eyelids, which must be a terrible thing. I mean, what do you do? But the doctor had, or the doctor referred the baby boy without any eyelids to a consultant surgeon who said to the parents, look, what I can do with the boy, with your permission, is I can perform a circumcision and I can use the skin that I take away the graft. I can use it to reconstruct, to build new eyelids for the lad. The problem is, though, he's going to be a bit cockeyed, according to the surgeon. I'm here all week. I'm not here all week. You'll be glad to hear. Back in a moment with my guest then. Music from Jackie Wilson. I get the sweetest feeling. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour. Thursday's Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Salford City. And it's nice to bring some good news. There is a brilliant new film about climate change, about the climate alarm. It's called Climate the Movie, The Cold Truth, directed by Martin Durkin and produced by Tom Nelson. Now, the film attempts to expose the alarm, the claim that we are hurtling towards climate catastrophe as being a made-up scare story, basically, with very little, if any, basis in science, right? It talks about how the increase in extreme weather events, which are talked up all the time by the mainstream, the legacy media, don't in fact have anything to do with man-made CO2. It's an excellent film. I was lucky enough to see an advanced copy of it. Today, pretty much every video sharing platform, YouTube, BitChute, Rumble, Vimeo and more are showing this film for free. Watch it today, Climate the Movie, and then alert everybody you know that they should watch it too, because it's a brilliantly produced and brilliantly put together film. Speaking of producing, let's welcome Tom Nelson to the program. Tom is the man who was on production duties. Tom, welcome to the Richie Allen Show. What a job, my friend. Great film. Congratulations to everybody involved.
All right. Thank you very much for the introduction, and thanks for having me on your show. It's a great day that this movie's finally coming out.
Was it hard work, Tom? I believe it came out of your podcast, because you have a successful podcast where you speak a lot about climate change and the climate alarm. And I think it was an episode of the podcast where you decided to remake or to kind of bring forward a famous and a very well put together film about climate, which is about 10 or 12 years old, or maybe a bit older. Is that what happened? You got together and said, we need an updated climate movie.
Yeah, that is kind of what happened. I was a big fan of Martin Durkin's The Great Global Warming Swindle. Came out about 17 years ago in 2007. And I just had him on my podcast just to talk about it. And kind of out of the blue, Martin said, you know, I really would like to remake that movie. And my ears really perked up because I thought that would be a great idea. So then that's what kicked the whole thing off. And it was a lot of hard work. And almost all of it was done by Martin. He wrote the script. And he figured out exactly how to lay out the movie, and he did almost all the interviews. So he gets 100% of the credit for actually putting this thing together. He did a great job. He's done so many documentaries, and he at this point in his life, he really knows how to do it. He knows how to effectively communicate stuff. So he's exactly the right person to make this movie.
I think you're selling yourself a bit short, Tom. I've been around television, radio, and film for years. I know a good producer when I see one. You've done a great job on it. Before we talk about the film itself, tell me about your own journey, Tom. When and why did you get into talking about the climate alarm or the climate hoax?
Oh, it started for me way back in about 2005 or so. I was just minding my own business. I was a bird watcher and not into any scientific controversies. But then way back when then, Cornell announced that they had rediscovered the ivory-billed woodpecker. And they had a paper about it, a scientific paper with 17 authors. It was just a huge deal. But as a bird watcher, I just looked into the evidence a little bit for myself, and I could quickly see that it was just incredibly flimsy. I couldn't believe they announced a rediscovery based on the evidence that they had. So I blogged about that quite a bit. And in the process of heavily blogging about that scientific controversy, then some other guy wrote to me and he said, you know, if you look at this controversy, it looks a lot like the global warming controversy, that if you take that the evidence for that one, if you dig into that for yourself, you're going to find the same thing. So that's what I did. Within a day, I looked into the evidence for myself on global warming, and I quickly found out it was the same thing, that experts were supposed to believe in this thing, but if you looked at it for yourself, what the experts believed is not the truth at all. So that's how I got started on that.
That's how you got started. Let me do a couple of questions that I've got to do. I mean, our listeners will know that I am very much on the same page as you with regards to how I feel about anthropogenic warming. I like yourself, I don't believe in it. I don't believe there's any evidence. But I've got to be fair to people who are listening who maybe do believe in it. So first question then, and I'm sure you've had this one before, have any major fossil fuel organizations or companies put you up to making the film, and have they funded it, Tom?
No, that's an absolute no. I mean, I've been doing this since around 2005, and I've never received one penny from anybody, fossil fuel or not. I've been doing it all on my own dime. And it's not that big of a deal because it doesn't really cost much to do what I'm doing. But there's this constant refrain that we all must be paid by fossil fuel companies. But I know tons of people that are working on this just out of they're doing the right thing because they think it's really important to fight back for the truth. And they're not getting paid by anybody. They're just doing it.
Good answer, Tom. I asked the same question of Ian Plimer when he was on, and others when they've come on as well. Good answer. Tom Nelson is our guest, the producer of Climate the Movie. Tom, if you'll help our listeners out a little bit, I'm going to give you a few softball questions, I suppose. We're told constantly that there is a consensus among scientists. We're told that 98% of the world's scientists who work in climate or who work in geology or oceanography or whatever, or who work in atmospheric studies, 98% of them say it's a slam dunk, man-made CO2 is causing climate change. What do you say to that? Is there 98% consensus? I mean, you've looked into this.
Yeah, I have looked into it. And there isn't a 98% consensus. I don't know if anybody actually knows that nobody's gone out and very carefully surveyed all scientists in the world with very carefully worded questions about what do you really believe and what don't you believe. Because this whole idea that 98% of them believe that CO2 has caused a climate crisis and the Earth is too hot right now, that CO2 is the climate control knob, weather's getting worse, none of that stuff. Scientists in general don't believe that stuff. I mean, I talk to a lot of them, I deal with a lot of them. I don't know what the numbers are, but the whole idea that all the experts believe in this stuff is just, it's a total crock. It's not true.
And we saw last year 1,100 or more scientists, all of them from credible and accredited institutions, published a paper saying that there is no climate emergency. So we must mention this as well. Tom, what do you say to people who are listening to CNN or they're listening to Sky News in London or the BBC and they're told constantly that since June last year, every subsequent month has broken temperature records. Every subsequent month has been the hottest month since records began. Therefore, there must be something going on. And, you know, humans must have something to do with that. This is what they're hearing on the BBC and Sky. How do you address that? These record months, month on month, every month, beating the record temperature that had ever been previously recorded. How do you respond to that?
I would say that I've been carefully reading these stories all the time since I started around 2005, and I've been hearing these stories almost all the time since then. Constantly, they're saying whatever year it is right now, it's the hottest year ever. I've even been using that hashtag on Twitter for a long time, hottest year ever, as a sarcastic thing, because they're constantly telling us, no matter what's happening this year, this is the hottest year ever. So there's enormous amounts of fudging going on. Some years are hot and some are cold, of course, and some months are hot, some are cold. If you look at the actual data for yourself, like I happen to live in Minnesota over in the U.S., and there's a website that has a list of what are the hottest months here in Minnesota for each month. When was the hottest? January, February, et cetera. And like all the summer months here in Minnesota were incredibly hot back in the 30s and 40s. So most of these hottest ever months here in Minnesota happened way before most of us were born. And of course, even a human lifetime is so short. The other 4 billion years, who knows how hot it was here in Minnesota. So this whole idea that every year, every day, whatever, hottest year ever, it's just propaganda. That's exactly what it is. And I don't put any store by it.
I found it very difficult over the years, I don't know about you, Tom, to invite the climate evangelicals, and maybe I'm being unkind in calling them that, but Friends of the Earth, the Green Party, I've invited them on. Now, I've got a, you know, pretty reputable radio show, it's got a decent reach, and I've said to them, look, in good faith, come on, I'm a nice guy, I'm not going to shout you down, and they refuse, they refuse, they refuse. They don't want to debate with anybody. Was that something you found when producing the film? Was it difficult to get them to participate and to take your questions?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through exactly that same thing with my podcast. I've done about 200 of them since July of 2022, and I've constantly been putting out invitations to all sorts of climate scientists. Let's just come on my podcast, so let's talk about the data and see what comes out of that. But they almost always ignore me, and once in a while they just say no, but they never say yes. I've never had any climate scientists come on my podcast. And I think that reluctance to debate is a pretty big deal. The people on our side were all about debating and talking freely about the evidence because we know the evidence is on our side, and they're about hiding from debate because at some level they must know that they can't support this. Otherwise, they would come out here in the open and talk about it. One person, I know of one, Andrew Dessler has been on Joe Rogan. He is the exception. But other than that, it's ducking debate almost constantly.
I didn't see that particular episode, and I do dip in and out of Joe Rogan. Did Joe take him on? Did he put some tough questions to him? Do you remember?
I think he mostly just let him speak. I don't remember super tough questions or anything, but I love that Joe Rogan did that because he had Steve Coonan on there. I think Coonan probably was on there first, and then to be fair and balanced, he had Dessler on there. I think it was in that order. But I love the fact that he had both of them on at different times, but he had both of them on, and they both were allowed to just speak their piece at great length. I think that's super healthy that happened. And I'd like to see way more of that happening. That was great.
Me too. It's a shame he didn't have both of them on at the same time and have a couple of beers and say, look, guys, look, let's thrash this out. Folks, you're listening to Tom Nelson. Tom produced the film Climate, the movie, which I watched yesterday. God, it's a brilliant film. It's very well put together. There's some really impressive scientists on there. Greatly edited, directed by Martin Durkin. Tom was talking about Martin earlier on. The film now is available to watch for free on every video sharing platform you can think of. Do you know what, Tom? I'm delighted that it's out there for everybody. Why is it free? Congratulations on making it available free. Why? Why was it important for it to be free to air?
Oh, yeah, it was very important for Martin and I both to make it free. We didn't want it to be behind any sort of paywall because I think that does make it for a lot smaller of an audience. So it's very fun for us today even to go out there and see how many people are watching it everywhere. And it is going to be seen, I think, by a lot more people who maybe don't want to spend the whole 80 minutes to watch it, and they can just watch clips and highlights are going to be coming online more and more, I think, in the next month or two. So there's going to be something for everyone, I think. And then if you want to just watch those short clips, that's fine. And then some people will watch the movie and they'll want to watch way more. So one thing is, since I am a podcaster that has interviewed a lot of people that are in the movie, if you see Will Happer in the movie and you want to hear way more from Will Happer, then you can go to my podcast. And he's been on there a couple times speaking for maybe an hour at a time. So you can dig in way deeper on any one part of it if you really want to learn more about what's happening in any one part of the climate debate.
Great, Tom. Tom, tell me, if it is a massive hoax they're perpetrating on humanity, and I think it is, and maybe we're not the best, maybe it's not the best interview now because it's difficult for me because I, myself, completely independent like you, not sponsored by any oil and gas companies, I used to be a very, very much a zealot for climate, Tom. You won't know this, but in my younger days, I was big into left-wing politics. And I was seduced by it, you know, when I was in my teens, my late teens. And I bought into that whole thing that conservatives were, you know, demon capitalists, and they were happy to destroy the world and destroy the ozone. And I did believe this. And I began, because I'm a half-decent guy, so I began to question everything that I'd been told and began to look into it myself, and was horrified to find that there were many, many, many scientific men and women who didn't go along with all of this. But let's say it is a big hoax then. What do you feel the payoff is? Why, Tom? Why would they do this to humanity? Turn life, make life so bloody difficult, make it so hard and so uncomfortable, because they really want to turn the planet into a bit of a prison, using this climate change threat as the excuse. And maybe that's the answer. Maybe I'm answering my own question. Why do you feel they're doing it?
Well, there's a couple parts to this. First, I wanted to mention that my path was similar to yours, too, that I was a believer in this back in the day. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I did believe in it at one time. It makes me happy that both of us used to be believers, and because other people who maybe are listening right now and are believers, if they look into the data, they can join us on the right side, on the scientific side. So that part makes me happy. And then, why is this happening? That's a great question, and I do think there's a certain group of people that are doing this just for the power and money, because there's absolutely enormous power and just trillions of dollars at stake here. So it it's a great swindle and a great way to for governments to gain more control, to micromanage our lives. And that's one thing. But another thing I like to stress is I think there's so much groupthink going on here. I think there's tons of people, maybe millions of people right now, that sincerely believe that CO2 is the climate control knob, the weather's getting worse, and all this crazy stuff. They've dedicated their lives to this, and they actually do believe it. So they're not necessarily out for the power and money. They actually believe they're saving their children by fighting carbon dioxide. So there's a lot of people who are on the wrong side of the science because they haven't dug into it. And just a little bit of thinking for yourself and checking out the data and maybe watching this movie. And if you spend just a little time checking any one part of the data out and you find out they're lying to you, that's what will happen. You look at polar bears, droughts, you look at floods, whatever. Constantly they're lying to us. So if you find one lie, then the next question is, what else are they lying to us about? And the answer is just about everything.
Tom, if there were a couple of claims, are there one or two specific claims made by the climate change lobby that are very easily debunked? Are there one or two things that, you know, leave you shaking your head because they are easily disproved? I suppose I'm asking you to lend some ammunition to some of our listeners today. If our listeners confront people who are all in on the climate change hoax, what can our listeners say to people, you know, that will debunk a couple of things very quickly?
Yeah, one off the top of my head, there's tons of them that fit in that ballpark. But one of them is fires in the U.S., for example. That is a huge one where they'll tell you, look, here's data of fires in the U.S. starting in 1982. And look, there's more fires now than there was in 1982. And the problem with that is, if you look back before 1982, they picked the exact low point of the whole 20th century. That's where they picked their starting point. If you go back before that, you can see that there's an embarrassingly huge number of fires that happened in the U.S. in the first half of the 20th century that's dwarfing by, I don't know, some huge factor. Year after year in the 20s and 30s, the fires were horrendous in the U.S. So picking 1982 as a starting point and saying, hey, look, CO2 must cause fires because they're worse since 82, that is absolutely clearly just a cherry-picked argument that if you check into that one, look at some graphs, you're going to find out that there's nothing to worry about fire-wise. You should worry about forest fires and do your best to avoid them if you live in a tinderbox house or something. But if you're thinking that CO2 makes fires worse, and if you're going to change your lunch now and that's going to prevent fires in 2050, that's just a complete crock again.
You know, it's interesting that fires, isn't it? You're a journalist, I'm a journalist, and the basics of journalism are very, very simple. Researching things, phoning people up and asking them questions is pretty simple. I learned when they were talking about wildfires in Portugal and in other parts of Europe that a withdrawal of funding, you know, local authorities going bankrupt basically, meant that woodland areas were not being cleaned up as they had traditionally been cleaned up, to make it more difficult for fires to, first of all, start and then spread. You know, cleaning up all the brush, all the scrub away from trees and stuff like that. It's basic stuff, Tom, isn't it? If you do a little bit of homework, you can find out that, you know, it's not really CO2. It's just poor forestry management because of a lack of funding through, austerity measures in certain countries in the last 10 years. It's bloody basic stuff, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I'm definitely not a fire expert, but I've probably read the same stuff as you. Yeah. And with fires and with the kind of everything that they blame on CO2, there's just tons of other factors. And you can't just say, oh, it's CO2, let's throw our hands up and not worry about all these other factors that really are important in whether your house gets burned in a forest fire. So, there's a lot of excuses. People are using CO2 as an excuse for something bad that happens. They can just point at CO2 and then they can kind of wash their hands of anything else that they didn't do that could have prevented this horrible thing.
Tom is our guest, Tom Nelson. Now, the film, you've got to go and watch it. Watch it and share it. Climate the Movie, produced by Tom, directed by Martin Durkin. On the podcast notes, this is a live radio show. Lots of comments coming in via the Richie Allen Show app. I'll read some out now for Tom, but I will put the links to where you'll find Tom on Twitter, where you'll find Martin on Twitter, the website for the film, and I'll put one or two links on YouTube, maybe Vimeo as well, or Vimeo, so you can watch the film. Watch the film, dear listener. It's very, very good, and it is hugely important. Number of questions and comments coming in, Tom. A lot of people have seen it today, and they're telling me it's brilliant. I know this. I watched it myself yesterday. So a lot of praise for the film and how it looks and how it sounds. So well done, you, and well done, Martin. Carey has been in touch and says, Richie, I'm sure you'll ask Tom, but does Tom or even Martin, did they believe in weather manipulation? For example, fires maybe, as Tom was talking about fires. And a previous guest said on this programme that GMOs are creating effects that can affect the weather. So what about weather manipulation and messing around with the Gulf Stream and that? That's something that a lot of people believe in and think might be playing some role in extreme weather events. What do you think yourself, Tom?
Yeah, I've only checked into that in recent months myself. And from what I've checked into, I think it is something that is happening. To what extent, I don't know. I don't know how much is happening to each day, but I do think it's happening. One point I'd make, though, is that if you look at the data on extreme weather, that the weather isn't getting more extreme. So far, it's not like the weather is way worse than it was in the 1930s, and there must be some reason, because the weather isn't yet worse than it's been in the past. It's the weather has just been fluctuating up and down, and there might be some local weather that is happening that some sort of a weather manipulation is affecting it. I'm seeing some mainstream articles saying that in China they have like thousands of people that are working on local weather modification. So there's a very good podcast on this that a lot of people probably have listened to, and I've listened to them as well, about the evidence that people are experimenting, at least experimenting, with all sorts of different methods of weather manipulation. I believe there's a Jim Lee that I just watched on a podcast last week or two. He had a lot of interesting things to say that I had not heard before. So there's probably a lot of listeners out there who've dug a lot deeper than I have on this.
Plenty of people. Dane Wigington is another guy, some listeners will say. Maybe yes, maybe no, but there's some interesting people who have been doing research on this for years. Nick Begich is another one, the HAARP installations. I mean, Jesse Ventura went up there to look at that thing where they shoot, they try to ionise the atmosphere and, you know, to basically mess around with the Gulf Stream. I mean, that can't be bloody good, can it, Tom? But anyway, we'll leave that for now because Claire's been in touch. I think Claire watched the film. Richie, I'd argue humans are totally responsible for the world heating. We take the temperatures, process the data and spin the numbers because that's the only place that global warming is happening. It's the records, says Claire. That's a very good point. It's the records. Do you know, do you find it, I don't think it's very sophisticated, but it is incredibly effective, the programming, isn't it, Tom? I mean, you just mentioned there how extreme weather events are not any more frequent now than 80 or 90 years ago. Again, I've looked into this myself and I can say you are right, they are not. But what is happening is our news, our 24-hour news channels are basically picking any bloody event they can find. Like I believe there was some flooding in Bolivia or maybe Venezuela because a river burst its banks. And today, all over the news, they're talking about this is climate change, you know. There's some smog in India, Tom. Who'd have believed it, Tom? There's some smog in India, you know, and that must be climate change as well. And then they're bringing in, remember Al-Qaeda, remember September the 11th, they brought in coded charts to tell us what the terror threat was. Remember, if it's amber, it means that terror. Yeah. They're doing this for the weather as well. So it's not sophisticated, Tom, but by God, it's effective, isn't it?
Yeah, there's all sorts of parts of this question here. But a good point is that the world is just such a huge place that if you are covering all of it, you have somebody real-time reporting from anywhere. There's something horrible happening kind of all the time in the world. And back, whatever, 50 years, 100 years ago, if something really bad happened on the other side of the world, you wouldn't know about it, at least not now. You might find out about it quite a bit later. But now there's this instantaneous communication. And if they want to tell us that something horrible is happening, yep, it's happening somewhere. But that doesn't mean it wasn't happening, 50 years ago. It was, but we just didn't know about it as much. And then you talk about the data. I think you might have touched maybe on data fudging, but there's so much that work that Tony Heller has done and Willie Soon has done about the fudging of past temperature data that it's pretty shocking. Willie Soon talks about a guy who kept downloading every day, I believe he would download the temperature records that he could find online, and they would constantly be changing. The temperatures from the 1930s and stuff wouldn't just change once. They would be changing over and over. So there was a lot of manipulation of data. And I don't know why you would be changing temperatures from the past unless I think there's something nefarious going on there. And there has been a lot of work. Tony Heller has exposed it to cool the past so that, hey, we can say, hey, it's warmer now because look at how cool it was in the past, when really the raw data from the past doesn't show that it was cold back then.
No, and 300,000-400,000 years ago, forgive me if I'm wrong, there was basically no continental ice sheets, and the Arctic and the Antarctic experienced what we'd call tropical weather for a pretty long time. And of course, all of this predated the existence of mankind on planet Earth. So we've had incredible extremes, which they never mention, of course. They talk about since records began, but they mean, of course, when people started keeping notes, but they don't go back any further. We have ice core records to show that at times it was so cold the planet was uninhabitable by anything. And, of course, again, there was less or, in some cases, more CO2 in the atmosphere than there is now. Tom Nelson is our guest. Tom has produced a film that you must watch this week, Climate the Movie, directed by Martin Durkin. I'm going to put links. You don't need me to give you links. Just go to a video sharing platform, enter Climate the Movie, watch the film, leave a nice comment for Martin and Tom in the comments if you can. Thank them for it because they're not trying to make a buck with it at all. They're putting it out there because, Tom, I think this is the fight of our lives. Do you? I don't think of any, there's nothing more important than this because of the way they want to change the way we live. I think there's a window of time that we have to prevent the madness, the dystopian world they want to create. There's an urgency about this, I think. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. I 100% agree with what you just said. This is the fight of our lives, and I think this is exactly the right time to go full bore and just kill this thing off or drive a stake into the heart of the climate scam. This is the time, and so many people are waking up on, we've heard all of these other lies in the last 3 or 4 years, and people, a lot of people I'm talking to have said that, okay, I found out they lied to us about our health and all sorts of other things. What else are they lying to us about? And then they start looking at climate, and right away they can find out, yep, they're lying to us here too. There's a Doc Mollick. He is a podcaster. He is a brilliant guy in terms of digging into this stuff. And I was just on his podcast.
Yeah.
He's just one example of so many people who have followed the same path. Just look at the data for yourself and think for yourself, and you're going to find out that they're lying again.
We know a lot of the same people. Ahmad Malik, of course. Yeah, he's been on with me. And you mentioned who did you mention? Tony Heller, of course. You mentioned John, Jim Lee. Yeah, we know a lot of similar people, Tom. Tom Nelson is our guest now. Jer says, excellent guest, Richie. So great to hear his point of view. Can you ask Tom if he thinks that the real conspiracy is scientists' fear going against the consensus? Because if they do, they might lose grants, they might lose reputation, they might lose tenure at their universities. Great question from Jer. What do you think?
Yeah, again, 100%. That is absolutely a huge problem. And that's, we only have 80 minutes in the movie to do this, but that's heavily stressed in the movie. That is why you might think that scientists don't disagree, because you get shunned. If you're 30 years old and you come out and start talking like I am, start pointing out all the holes in this, you run a huge risk of losing your job and being unemployable, can't pay your mortgage, and you're canceled. So I think there's tons of people who know they're on the inside. They're working as climate scientists. They know that this alarm is ridiculous, but they can't dare speak, or they lose their livelihood. Will Happer says that in the movie, that he is probably well past retirement age now. But he says, if I was 30, I wouldn't be speaking out, because you just can't afford to do it. So everybody agrees because there's so much penalty for disagreeing. So I do think there's strength in numbers, and I do think this thing's going to die when more and more people step forward and say this is not true. And scientific truth is going to win out, and why not now? I think it is going to win out soon. I think it's going to crumble pretty quick here.
I hope you're right, Tom. You made a very interesting point a moment ago about what went on in the last 4 years, the propaganda about a relatively harmless virus, relatively harmless for most people, the shutdowns that destroyed the economy, that ruined people's jobs, the dodgy jabs that were pushed on people under penalty, they might not be able to travel or might lose their jobs. Now we know that the jabs have caused widespread harm. And you made an excellent point. As terrible as the last 4 years have been, it might help your cause and your directors and everybody else who wants to blow the lid off of this hoax. What the governments did might very well lead people to begin to question everything now. So this could be the time, Tom. It could be ripe to wake people up. What say you? I think it is.
Yeah, I've heard it said, and I like when people say that the elites here went for the Great Reset, and what they got was a Great Awakening. Yeah. I think that is what's happening, that people are waking up and they're finding out again, so many lies are being used to try to control us and take our money in all sorts of different areas in our lives. And people are waking up to all of them, not just the climate one, not just the health one. So I'm very happy to see this. I just went on a tour of Europe as I went to some premieres of this movie. I talked to all sorts of people from all sorts of places. And over, I kept hearing this story of people waking up. So it's been a very fun 2 weeks for me to hear these stories.
And I imagine you're a bit knackered, as we say in Ireland, in the old country. I'd imagine you're a bit knackered. I imagine you could do with a few good nights sleep. But thanks for coming on today. No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Ardal has been in touch. He says, Richie, Dane Wigington gives credible evidence that some material sprayed in the skies makes forests extremely combustible, so any tiny source will ignite it and will burn at much higher temperatures. What's fascinating is broadsheet newspapers, Tom, in recent days, including The Guardian here in the UK, has been talking about geoengineering. It's amazing. They're talking about these things now. And years ago, I would interview guests, and I'd be pretty agnostic about these things. I would be, sit on the fence, ask devil's advocate questions. That's my job. But now they're talking about this stuff. So maybe Ardal has a point. Chris has been on to say, I won't read that one out. It's about Easter eggs, funnily enough. Wiz has been on to say, Richie, ask Tom If 70% of the world is covered in water, how many weather stations do they have in the oceans to give us a global average? That's a bloody good question, that. These are questions, of course, that we should be asking the climate evangelicals. I doubt Tom will have the answer to that, but that's an interesting point, isn't it? If the world is covered in so much water, which it is, how can they give us such an accurate global average water temperature? Bloody good question, Tom.
Yeah, that is a great question. And I forget, there's these Argo buoys that are out there measuring the temperature that's supposed to be a lot better than what we had before. And I think that's only maybe 20, 25 years old where we have some reasonable data from the oceans. But yeah, great. Before that, like in 1850, how warm was it in the middle of the ocean? I mean, they had some ships going out there, then, you know, measuring the temperature of buckets a little bit, but yeah, hardly anything. We don't really know. This whole idea that we know what the global average temperature was to a hundredth of a degree, even now we don't know that, and we certainly don't know that in 1850. And then once you go back to thousands of years ago, then we have to just look at other things. Like, I should mention that we find some tree stumps that are 5,000 years old, maybe, that are just way north of the current tree line. And that's a great indicator that 5,000 years ago, it must have been a lot warmer than it is now. We don't know how exactly warm the earth was, but it was warm enough to allow a tree to grow in a place where a tree can't grow there now. So there's some data like that we can take a look at.
Absolutely. A couple more questions, Tom, and I'll let you go. You've had a long... Well, I know you're a few hours behind me, but you've had a busy few weeks, and I know you've got a busy day today as well. We've mentioned the film. There is a website for the film. What's the website address?
Yeah, I'm running on a lack of sleep here. What is it? Climatemovie.net?
Well done. Yeah. I'm going to bring it up here. Yeah, absolutely. Hashtag Climate the Movie if you're using Twitter as well. Climate the Movie out today. Tom, your podcast, where can people watch your podcast or listen to it?
Yeah, you can search for Tom Nelson Podcast, and it's up on like 17 different places. It's up on YouTube and Rumble and BitChute, and it's under Spotify. It's in lots of different places. Again, there's about 200 episodes. And then I do have a Substack that you can Google maybe for Tom Nelson Substack. And over there, I have a frequently asked questions thing where about this movie. It has a lot more information about articles that have already been written about the movie, where you can watch it, and all sorts of stuff about it is out there on my Substack.
Tom, tell me to mind my own business now, if you like. But we in the UK, particularly in the Northwest, we have a lot of independent cinemas. Now, these would be single screen cinemas. And they would be in towns right across the Northwest, and they are run by families or by individuals or business people. Wouldn't it be lovely if our listeners were to try and persuade some of these cinemas to show the film, wouldn't it? Obviously, they're not going to rip off copyright from you or make any money or anything like that, but that's not a bad idea, is it? There's so many of these places in the UK. It'd be great to get the film out there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I love that idea. I think for some other movies that people have done that, maybe rent out, or maybe they'll give you a theater for a small price and show it to 50 people or whatever. Or some people might just show it in their house. They might show it to five people or a community center and just get together and maybe show the movie and talk about it a little bit afterwards, or maybe invite some local climate realist who you know to talk a little bit at this event. I love the idea of people doing that, and I really hope that happens.
And they shouldn't do it without reaching out to you, by the way. Don't do anything without saying hello to Tom or Martin on social media. If you plan on doing that, you've got to include them. It's their film at the end of the day, but it's not bad. I know one particular independent cinema. I'm going to reach out to the person. Tom, look, all I can say is congratulations on the film. But you see, you've ticked all the boxes for me making the film. It looks beautiful and it sounds beautiful. I'm all about the technical side of it. It's great. Well done to you and Martin. Good luck with it as it is rolled out today, I'm sure. Hundreds of thousands of people will have seen it by the weekend. And please God, if there is a God, millions of people will see it before the end of the month. Thanks for your time today, Tom. It was great to meet you.
All right, thanks a lot. I really enjoyed talking to you.
It was my pleasure, Tom. Thank you very much. Tom Nelson, the producer of Climate the Movie, which is available on pretty much every video sharing platform today. Watch the film, show it to others, debate it, talk about it. It's great. It is now 19 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Salford City, and I'm Richie Allen.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Indeed, it is myself. Right, I think I'll take a musical break to give the old vocal cords a bit of a rest. When I come back, lots of your comments to get through. Thursday's programme is the last live one of the week. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the weekend now, so it must be said. Looking forward to the weekend. Guess who's in town in the next few weeks doing lots of gigs at the brand new Co-op, a venue which is based out at Etihad, or where City play their games. It's only the Eagles. Back in Manchester. Well, I'm running down the road, it's gonna save me. 2, 3, 4. Eagles and Take It Easy. Yeah, there's a new venue. It's about to open in Manchester, near where Manchester City plays their football. It's called Co-op Live, and it is meant to be state-of-the-art, the last word in technology. It's a splendor, apparently, a technological splendor, I tell you. If I'm not mistaken, I think Peter Kay might be the very first performer to open this venue. It's booked solid then with great acts for the rest of the year. Anybody you can think of and everybody. Look for it online. It looks amazing. I've been looking at the website today to see was there anything that I could take the missus to just to have a bit of a mosey, bit of a gander, see what it's like, Co-op Live. Good evening to my great friend Michael Cohen. Good evening, Michael. Great friend of mine. He says, Richie, the same system that sold us WMD? The very same, Michael. The very same weapons of mass destruction. You wonder at what point will people stop believing these liars, you know? You know, like I said, I think Michael might have been like me. You know, Michael at one time might have been very much sucked in by the climate lie, because Michael, like myself, would be a trade unionist and he would be on the left like myself. And we bought into it, you know, that the only people who said it was a lie were dirty old Tories and big business. But there's just no evidence of it. I mean, I've broken it down a few times on this programme myself in very simplistic terms, and there is no evidence for it. You know, I did it a few weeks ago on the programme. The facts, which are not disputed even by the evangelicals, you know, they are laughable. This is not happening. You know, CO2, as created by human beings' activity on planet Earth, is not changing the climate, and there's no evidence for it. There is an abundance of evidence that some human beings and some businesses and some entrepreneurs and some corporations are filthy bastards, and they are doing terrible things to the environment. We know this. We talked about it on the programme earlier on. The water, we talked about it. Starmer's bullshit interview on Jeremy Vine's programme today, when Neil rang in to say my water bill has gone up by 18%. Rather than, you know, take Starmer to task on that, Jeremy Vine left them waffle on about pollution, which is important. But Starmer's not going to do anything about water pollution or the pollution of Britain's rivers by the corporations who were sold the running of the water, the management of the water, sold by Thatcher and Major and Blair, and it continued under David Cameron and George Osborne. They're all the same, every one of them. Selling everything off. Again, I did a rant. Not proud of me rants, but I did a linear kind of expose. Not that I exposed it. It was exposed many times by many people before me. But I put it together in a linear way. Where it began, Thatcher, when she got in 79, the selling off of everything that was great and valuable, everything that belonged to all of us. And of course, while Thatcher was doing it, Gareth Fitzgerald and Charlie Haughey and all of those bollockses in Dublin, they were doing it too, you know, through the European Union. And Bertie, Teflon man, Bertie Ahern, another bastard, selling it all off. The forestries, Quilcha, everything is up for sale. And there was very little opposition to it. Again, there was on the left, of course. But in the media, there was no opposition to it in the media, none whatsoever. Yeah, sell it off. Remember George Osborne? Remember that bastard when he sold off the UK's stake in Eurostar? And I know you're probably yawning now because it's a story I've only told probably 500 times on the Richie Allen Show since 2014. When Osborne, as filthy a fucker as has ever walked the earth, decided to sell off Eurostar, or Britain's stake in it, He was warned against it by every financial advisor that was able to get a hold of him. You can't sell it, George. Why? Well, to sell it now, George, is tantamount to corruption, because we know for a fact that its value is going to quadruple in the next 5 years, George, because Eurostar is going to open up new routes across Europe. So selling it now is criminal. He sold it anyway. George Osborne. Remember him? The UK government was giving contracts to Carillion. Contracts to Carillion. Even though Carillion had issued a share price warning to its investors. It basically said, Carillion, we're about to go bust. The UK government continued to give it contracts. And guess what George Osborne did then? He did something that should have seen him strung up with a cloth sack around his head with a rat inside it, and he should have been thrown into the fucking Thames. They were giving contracts to Carillion knowing the company was going bust, and George Osborne was telling his friends at BlackRock Investment to short sell Carillion. Does it get any more corrupt than that? I'm waiting for an answer here. Help me out. Does it get any worse than that? The Guardian ran this story. Nobody else did. I talked about it. In fact, I talked about it before The Guardian, because I was informed about it by an investor who came on the programme, The Richie Allen Show, years ago. A serial investor. He said, you won't believe what's going on, Richie. The Chancellor is being... He has a part-time job with BlackRock where they give him £100,000 a month for 4 or 5 hours' work. But they got their payoff, didn't they? Yeah, Carillion is fucked. How do you know, George? Well, we know. And to hide the fact that they're fucked, we're continuing to give them contracts so nobody will know they're fucked. What are you saying, George? I'm saying short sell the fucker. And you'll make hundreds of millions of pounds, which is what BlackRock did. And in reward for his skullduggery and his shenanigans and his outright criminality, they gave George Osborne the Evening Standard, didn't they? A guy without a journalistic bone in his body. George, here's your reward, you dirty bastard. You can run the Evening Standard now. Good boy, well done. You did your bit for the globalists. It's exactly 8 minutes to the top of the hour. Listen, before I forget, I want to give a massive, massive, massive mention. There's a great pal of mine. In fact, his family are great friends of mine. Matt Calderwood, Matty. Matty joined the Fusiliers a few years ago, 4 years ago, I think, and went into the army, 16 or 17. One of the nicest guys you could meet, great young lad. And he passed out, you know, he graduated, and he'd always been an amateur boxer with talent. So the army were interested in him for the boxing, like, you know. Last night, he only went and won the UK Armed Forces 57 kilo category, weight category, I think 57 kilo. Don't get me, I don't want to mess it up, which I think is either welterweight or lightweight. I think it's even featherweight. So I'm all over the place here. You think I might know this stuff, but I'm a bit of an idiot. We're very proud of him in Salford. I'm very proud of Salford. I like to think I'm an adopted Salfordian. I love the place. And I love the people of, you know, the people I meet. I mean, I sound like some, when I say I love the people, I sound like some bullshit Z-list celebrity. I'm not even a Z-list celebrity. Nobody knows who I am around here, and that's the way I like it. But I love the place and I love the people. Salford is wonderful. And Matty Calderwood is a great Salfordian. He won the UK Armed Forces 57 kilo category. So he's the Armed Forces champion. And he's going out to Australia soon to box for the army out there. And I'm really delighted for him. And so are his neighbours. And so are his mum and dad, Barry and Tracy. Tracy runs a laundrette in Weest, the Easy Wash Laundrette. She's a great lady. She'll have to give me a couple of beers now for the free ad. I'll collect another day. But delighted for Matty Calderwood. So well done, Matty. If you hear this, everybody's proud of you, pal. I was able to see it last night on the live stream. It's great these days, isn't it? It's great, the technology. WhatsApp. There you are. There's the link, Richie. And I could see him boxing his opponent, who was a good fighter too. Anyway, you've been messaging me about corruption. Thank you. Regarding Climate the movie, Alan watched it earlier on. He said, brilliant job. Congratulations to everybody involved. I hope, says Alan, it will stimulate much needed debate. Great comment, Alan. Thank you very much. Nicola Lund is a great lady. We love Nicola. She is a former teacher and is a journalist. You can often read her in The Conservative Woman. Nicola said to me, she said, Richie, I'm catching up with this week's shows. Please put on that hilarious James O'Brien sample that you put out the other day. I don't know how I can put it on Twitter. Somebody's going to have to make a video of it or something. And I think somebody might be doing that. It's, you remember Scatman John. Scatman, the song Scatman. Well, I mixed up a James O'Brien tape. My own James O'Brien Scatman thing. And I called it Scatman James. Do you want to hear it before I sign off tonight?
But in the...
Get the bloody jam. Get the bloody jam. Get the bloody jam.
But in the problem is, I'm interested in religion, as you know, and I'm interested in race, but only as a firefighter. Only as an enemy of racism. That's the extent of my interest in ethnicity. I want to live in a fairer, more decent world. So,
but in the get the bloody jab. Get the bloody jab. Get the bloody jab.
Yeah, I left it go on too long. Thank you, Nicola. Right, that's it for the programme, more or less. Thank you to my guest, to Tom Nelson. Do watch Climate the movie. Next time you'll hear me, tomorrow there will be a papers podcast. It'll be online early-ish. And then the Sunday Morning Melodies programme will air at 10 o'clock this coming Sunday morning at the usual time slot. Back to normal. Did an Irish programme last Sunday, Paddy's Day. Back to normal this Sunday. Tunes of yesteryear and some interesting stories as well. Sunday Morning Melodies this Sunday at 10 o'clock UK time. And I've already got some brilliant programmes lined up for you next week. I've invited Mark on. I mentioned this yesterday, Mark Bajerski, because I was fascinated by a report on the BBC about imaginary childhood friends. A really interesting report on BBC Radio 5 Live Breakfast to hear the elaborate stories children tell about their imaginary friends, and maybe, in some cases, maybe these friends are not quite so imaginary. So I've invited Mark on to talk about that. I've got some other stuff lined up for you for next week as well, so it's going to be a busy old week next week on the programme. Look, a lot of messages come in. By the way, a lot of messages come in, right, during the programme. If your message is not read out, I don't prioritise messages. It's the app is very convenient, and a lot of people send 3, 4, 5, 6 messages, sometimes in a 10-minute period. So a lot of messages come in, and then the ones that recently came in, they drop to the bottom, and I'm constantly scrolling back. If I haven't read out your comment, it's not because I'm deciding not to read out your comment. Please believe that. I read out everything as it comes in. It's just I get a lot of messages during the programme, so please, I don't think in any way that you're being ignored, you're not. It's a popular feature, you see, the app and the messaging through the app. So I'm closing out today with Jerry Reed. Yeah, I've got some Jerry Reed. I'm in the humour for some cowboy music, so I am some cowboy music today. Have a fantastic weekend, whatever it is you're doing, and I look forward to speaking to you next time. All right, closing out, Jerry Reed. Bye now. Speak real soon. Bye.